coming to you live from my apartment. It's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's a guy who's been known to make things awkward. I am Rob Cesternino. Everybody, welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast here for episode number 12, believe it or not, of Survivor, The Edge of Extinction. And we've got a really fun podcast today. We're going to talk to, from Ghost Island, Kellen Bechtold and Dominic Abate here in one podcast. Really excited about this experimental podcast formula to try to bring in two guests from one season to talk about everything that's going on. And between the two of them, I think we're going to have some very fun stuff to talk about here today. After last night's episode, we saw Ron Clark voted out of the game. Steven and I talked it all through on the Survivor Know-It-Alls, and we've got plenty more podcasting to come. Bryce Isaiah is going to join us on our feedback show on Friday, so get your feedback questions in. Rob has a website.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP as well for that. And of course, Liana Boris coming up on This Week in Survivor. And then more Snow-It-Alls on Sunday night after Game of Thrones. And then we'll get into the Wiggle Room with Josh Wiggler. Before I get to Dom and Kellen here on the call, I want to take a moment and mention our sponsor here today. Those are our friends over at Brook Linen. You know, you spend a third of your life in sheets. It's time for a bedding upgrade. A lot of people are saying that Ream has been using the sheets on the Edge of Extinction for clothes, and that is not the way to go. You wonder why she might be feeling irritable, because I can tell you that the sail on the Edge of Extinction is not the feeling of five-star hotel sheets. That's not how you should be getting it done. Why does it have to be so difficult and expensive to get incredible five-star hotel sheets at your home? That's where Brook Linen comes in. That's why they were the winner of the best of online bedding category, and they didn't have to go to the Edge of Extinction first to do that. They were founded in early 2014 by husband and wife Vicky and Rich, and their mission was to make those five-star hotel quality sheets more affordable and easy to order. Luxury sheets, get this, without the luxury markup. That's where Brook Linen came from, and that's why they're the fastest growing bedding brand in the world. Over 35,000 five-star reviews. Sheets don't just feel great, but they look great too. Mix and match over 25 colors and patterns to make your bedroom just right. Nicole and I have the Brook Linen sheets. They let us try them out. The most comfortable sheets that we've slept on. Now it's time for your upgrade. Brooklinen.com is giving an exclusive offer to our listeners. Get 10% off your first order and free shipping when you use promo code Rob at Brooklinen.com. Brook Linen is so confident in their product that all their sheets, comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. The only way to get 10% off your first order and free shipping is use promo code Rob at Brooklinen.com. That's Brooklinen.com, promo code Rob. Brooklinen, these really are the best sheets ever. No sleep till Brooklinen. All right, everybody, I'm very excited about today's podcast because this is something that I've looked to do more and more over the years. And I was very excited when this opportunity came up because we have the opportunity to combine not one, but two fantastic guests from Survivor Ghost Island here onto this podcast. We are very excited to bring back from Survivor 36. Here is Kellen Bechtold and Dominic Abate.
Hey yo, Robbio. I just had to. I had to get that in.
Oh, very good. Hello, everybody.
Kellen, how are you?
I'm doing so great. How are you two?
Yeah, very good. Very good. Very good.
I am.
Okay.
Same on my end. Yeah. Kellen, are you good?
Dom, how has life been over there? Are you still like, is it still my fault that you're
Every day we wake up, my kids come in my bedroom.
The bad lady.
They're like, Dad, that damn Kellen.
Okay.
Your children are saying, damn Kellen?
At this point, yeah.
Well, look, my children are going to school and I am getting blamed for being a bad influence on them, but I am actually pawning it off because last night I went around my house talking like Reem all night, and then I found out that my older son got in trouble at school for saying that he was going to drop kick somebody. And my wife was asking, drop kick? Where did you even learn about that? He's like, Dad says it with that lady puppet.
First of all, let's not at all skate over your Instagram takeover. All right. Because this needs to not be ignored. And I don't know if it meant more to me because I have kids or whatever it is, but I was sitting down to dinner when I started watching it because my kids had already eaten. I got back from work late yesterday. I'm biting into corn on the cob and I spit corn across my – I just was so good.
Dominic, thank you.
So good.
I appreciate that.
And the reason why I bring it up is because I'm supposed to do a takeover soon and I'm shutting it down.
You're out?
I'm rescinding. I'm redacting, whatever the word is. I'm pulling out. I don't want part of that. I can't compete with that.
I'm glad that you had fun. My wife was not talking to me by the end of the night. It was not as much fun for all parties involved. It was getting annoying.
Oh. No, she cannot. Nobody is allowed to get tired of your war dog or your Reem, okay? These are two of the greatest voices I've ever heard, and I hope we hear some.
Yes, Dominic, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Now, what I want to know is, what is the genesis of that? How did we, the three of us, end up here together on one podcast? Whose idea was this, and how did this come about?
Kellen, you want to speak?
I mean, I feel like it was definitely Dom's idea. So Dom and I have been working on our, mending our relationship for about a year now, and, have occasional phone conversations and catch up and really enjoy each other. Surprise, surprise. There was a time in our lives where we didn't so much, and now we like to just hang out and talk every once in a while. And we were just messaging back and forth, I think, right, Dom? And you said, hey, I'm going to pitch it to Rob that we should try and do a podcast together. And I was all in. I couldn't believe it. I loved the idea. I was like, oh, I don't know if Rob will be up for having two people at once. But if he is, like, I'm all in. And so
I envisioned it to be good. I think you're amazing on the podcast, Kellen. I told Rob that. And I just thought it would be a fun mix because we do have some wacky history. And yes, we have been on a very healthy path, I think. And, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll dig into that a little bit tonight. But I just thought that it would be a good combination of characters, the three of us, to get together and just shoot it.
Okay, well, I'm really excited because I have wanted to do this. But I find that a lot of times the Survivor people that I talk to don't love to share the spotlight. So this was an interesting opportunity, but not one that comes across my desk very often.
Yeah, I never thought of it like that. I mean, is that's a thing? People don't want to share the mic.
Yeah. Who knew? Right. Okay. Well, let's touch on what's going on here in Survivor Edge of Extinction. Kellen, overall, are you enjoying this season?
Oh, goodness. I am just, I'm not loving it. And I don't mean to be a picky Survivor viewer. And I really enjoyed the beginning of the season, but the last few episodes, I felt like it's been fairly predictable. I don't know. This week, definitely it surprised me this week. It was a really fun episode this week. And I was really excited to be talking to you, Rob, of course, about Survivor anytime, but especially to talk with Dom about how, and I loved Steven's article, in some ways they just saw Ghost Island before they left. And it's like, I wonder if it's just the flip side, like the overcompensation of just seeing our season. And that's why people are trying to make moves super early. I'll tell you what I do love about it is I'm like, see, told you fools, like I shouldn't have jumped ship. Like So I'm feeling very redeemed by watching people stick their neck out too early and get it chopped off. But I'm excited to talk to Dom to see what he thinks and how it's different from his.
Yeah. Well, let's just set the stage. Cause that is the number one thing I wanted to talk to you both about was the effect and the impact of Ghost Island on this group of survivors, because to go back and look at the filming dates, they left for Survivor 38 very shortly after the finale of Survivor Ghost Island. And then I believe they've said that they also watched the finale again at Ponderosa, and there was a big onus on Dominic and Kellen. It seemed like that the biggest takeaway was about our friend Laurel, and hey, make sure you don't want to be the person who waits too long to make a move if you want to win this thing. And so whatever you do, don't sit on your hands when there's time to make a move. Dominic, had you heard about this?
Well, yeah, I've definitely heard that commentary about, you know, I do know that they left shortly after our finale. I didn't know that they watched the finale a second time, but it definitely sounds like something that would make sense, because again,
that might be hearsay, that second part. I can't. Yeah.
Okay. So maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but I know that there is before you actually start to play the game, there is a pep talk you receive, you know, something to hype you up and really get you thinking about how you want to play this game, and that you're only going to get to play once, and there's only really a 5% chance that you're going to win it. So give it your all when you go out there. Don't sit, you know, just continue to swing. So if they did get some type of speech like that, or maybe were given the opportunity to revisit the finale, and even just having those last few episodes of our season fresh in their minds and just seeing what happens to the person that doesn't swing, that'll definitely have some effect on how they're going to play the game in their own season. But it still surprises me how many people aren't swinging. I know we see the big characters doing it, but I'm surprised to see that there's not to say nobody's swinging. Everybody seems to be doing something. I just think maybe the levels of creativity are some are higher than others for the most part.
Kellen, I want to sort of explore the idea of if a lot of people are making moves at the same time, is the better course of action to not be making moves?
I mean, if that's the side you can, so who would we think in this season is kind of doing that? I mean, Aurora, she's not really making moves herself. Mm-hmm. She seems to be doing all right. Gavin, I would argue, hasn't been making out in front of a lot of moves. So Gavin and Julie and Victoria, they're the ones, right? We would say.
You know, it's hard because difficult to separate moves from the edit, where Gavin and Victoria, they were part of that group that voted against Eric, which was one of those big moves early in the merge, which really started to destabilize this thing. And then I think that they've been involved in, a lot of different votes. Victoria was on the right side of the vote each and every time until last night, when it was her plan, but she actually cast her vote for Devin's. So it's hard to say that couple of people aren't making moves. It just feels like that we haven't seen as much from them as some of the other players who have been louder in the game.
Yeah, that's what it is. I think, I think it's not that they're not doing anything. They're just playing a more subtle game. They're definitely active. They're definitely making decisions. They're not sitting there letting people direct them. I mean, Victoria to me is playing, I think, the best game right now. As much as I love what Rick did, and I have a lot to say about him, but Victoria's game is so on point right now because she's sharp. She's making decisions in a very subtle way, and like you said, she hasn't been on the wrong side of the vote. She's known every time, and she's not playing a flashy game where Rick, who is playing a flashy game, is just putting that target right on his back the second they get back to camp after tribal. So I think it's not a matter of are people doing things. It's the matter of how subtle they're being when they do it, or how flashy they're being when they do it. And that was something I suffered from myself. You know, I couldn't get a grip on just having a quiet moment. I had to always present it in a way that I thought would win me votes at the end of the game. So for anyone that is left in the game, they're really trying to figure out that balance on should I be flashy, be subtle, what's winning the jury, what's not. And it's just a really tough balancing act.
Kellen, do you have any thoughts on Victoria that Dominic brought up?
Oh, I agree. I shouldn't have said that she wasn't making moves. I definitely agree with the disclaimer on it that she's not making flashy moves. I've enjoyed watching her game. Of course, it seems like forever ago that she pulled off the Aubrey vote. So I think she's playing a great game. She seems like she's in with people, but definitely staying behind the scenes. She hasn't won an immunity,
no.
Correct? So, you know, she hasn't had that bling around her neck to draw attention to herself, and she seems to be always in the know. So I've enjoyed watching her for sure. And is probably my favorite female player of the season.
Yeah,
I like Dominic, her. I want to ask you about, you know, we saw Rick Devins have the flashy move or the flashy idol play at Tribal Council last night. And then also, we saw the jury's reaction to that. How much does that make an impact to sort of like the theatrics at the Tribal Council?
This is a really important thing what Rick's doing here. All right. If you break down the Tribal Council from start to finish, it starts with Rick talking in a way that makes himself a victim in front of the jury. And you even see reactions. He's like, you know, they went through my bag, Aurora. I caught her going through my stuff. And you see the jury kind of react in a way that's like, oh my God. But then he immediately follows it up with a joke, right? And like gets people laughing a second later. It's weird, but you got to remember that this is a jury that's not having a good time at Ponderosa. And again, I don't have any experience at Ponderosa or Edge of Extinction. I don't know anything about either of them because I never spent any time in Ponderosa. So I don't
sounds know like how a humble brag.
People's decision. No, it's not what I meant though. But I'm saying though, I don't know what it does to people's mindsets to go back and be in a party atmosphere and then be like, oh, we got to go to Tribal Council tonight. All right. Sounds like a good time. And then if you compare that to people who are just sitting and staring at each other every day and have absolutely nothing to do with themselves. I mean, Kellen, you know, you remember what it was like to have an off day in the game, right? Like when there's no tree mail. You just like, oh my God, what am I going to do with myself this entire day? We're not going to a challenge. We're not going to tribal. We're not doing anything. Like that's the longest day in the game. And to think about like, I would complain on one day and then look at Reem, dude, I've been here for 33 days. Like this is insane. To be out there for 30-something days with absolutely nothing to do, of course she's choking people out when they show up. You know what I mean? So
sport.
What I'm trying to get at is, well, think about it. So if Rick, if they come to Tribal Council, they're looking for something to do. It's like going to the movies, okay? And now Rick, like I said, he'll start off the whole presentation with him turning himself into a victim, like they went through my bag, and then he follows it up with some type of humor, and it just really puts this warm feeling in the jury that just hasn't felt anything all day, every day for however days. And then I think another thing with the way Rick got really, I don't know what word you would use towards Ron and Julie after he proved that the advantage was expired is like, he would go out of his way to, like, what I'm trying to say is, like, in other words, for example, when Jeff asked Ron about the loved one's visit, Ron was like, well, I really sympathize with Victoria and Lauren because I know what that father-daughter relationship must be like, and that's really something that's important to me. And he left Rick completely out of it. He didn't say he feels bad for or has any sympathy for the fact that Rick didn't get to spend the day with his wife. And so to me, like, that was another shot at Rick. Mm-hmm. Rick's like, okay, all right, good. So when I prove to you that this advantage is fake, I'm going to stuff it to you so hard. And I just think that the whole act of Rick, after he proved that the advantage was expired and how he walked away and was like, really, Ron, you had to humiliate me in front of my kids. Like, that whole thing, he set the jury up to, like, sympathize for him again because he was a victim again. And then he followed it up with, you know, this great triumphant mm-hmm. moment where he pulls out a real idol and has everyone laughing and smiling. And that is the essence of winning the jury. Rick has this gift to just completely be able to make them feel sorry for him in 1 second and then love him the next. And there's no question about it. If Rick gets to the end of this game, he wins this game hands down, no contest. The question is, will he be able to do that after all of this theatrics he pulled off? Every time he goes back to camp now, he's he's number one on their target list. So I don't know how he's going to get to the end, but if he does, it's his game. Will he get there? He's got another two or three tribals to get through. So yeah, we'll see.
Kellen, I want to ask you about the perspective of the jury, because in my mind that I feel like that the jury, especially when it's a big group like this, that they are a lot of times like the audience. And I think that they are most sympathetic to whoever the underdog is. And I think that Rick is really playing this perfectly with the jury, where he's the person who is speaking truth to whoever is perceived to be in power in the game right now, where he's the person who is, calling out Ron, which the jury really loves. And I feel like that Dominic, in your particular case, that I think that you and Wendell were not seen as the underdogs in your season. So I feel like that the jury in some ways might have been rooting for somebody to, flip the game on its head, because the people that are out of the game, I feel like that they just want to see the people that got them out of the game also knocked out of the game. Kellen, is that a valid theory?
It was amazing the way that he was like, I'm getting back at Ron for all of us who have been mistreated. Like, we've all been manipulated. We've all been voted out by this guy. And the way he was like, probably knew that his advantage wasn't going to work and plays that. And I mean, I wonder how much of that he planned before he went into it, or if he just got in front of the camera and he's a cameraman and just played out the whole story. And I also love how animated the jury is. I mean, I just think about how much I was gasping and eye rolling and all that stuff. And I had all day to do other things at Ponderosa. They have been so bored, and like every 3 days they've had nothing to do, and to come in and watch it all go down. I've really enjoyed the way the jury is watching Tribal, and Rick just brought it home last night. It was really, really cool. And yeah, as the underdog, it wouldn't be as fun, right? If Rick was like, boom, gotcha, I'm in charge, and then did all of that, right, Dom? But if he was the underdog, it was a much better story.
I want to touch on something you said also, if it was something that Rick planned, because when you leave camp to the time you're sitting at Tribal and start speaking with Jeff, there is a good amount of a waiting period where you're not allowed to speak to the other contestants. I'm not going to get into details on how that works, but there's a good chunk of time where you have nothing to do but think about what you're about to go into. You're about to be in Tribal Council. You're about to go through this whole theatrical presentation of whatever's about to happen. And this really is, for me anyway, was really a time to think about, should I pull the trigger on doing something here? Should I bring this up? Should I bring that up? Should I how do I go about it? Do I present it in a way that's, is it going to be distasteful to the jury? Mm-hmm. Is it going to not be? And when you, the more time you have in that waiting period, it allows you to really finesse your idea of how you want to present it, you know? And sometimes you have more time than other times, you know what I mean? Sometimes you only have a real quick period where you don't have much time to really scope out how you want to do it. So I don't know if there was a time, but I would imagine that Rick really said, look, if this advantage is good and it's legit, then I don't have to do any of this. But if it's not good, I'm going to lay the hammer down on Ron and Julie. And it just was too good. He just, like I said, he turned himself into a victim and then followed up with this huge triumphant moment. Like, you know, and it just really, I couldn't believe the reaction that the jury gave when it happened. I mean, I would do things, what I thought were big moves. And, you know, Kellen's right here. She'll tell you her reaction wasn't one of, oh, that was good. It was jaw dropping, eyes rolling. So, I mean, it really comes down to having that time to really clean it up and prep it in a way that you think might not hurt yourself with the jury.
Yeah, I don't think that Ron was surprised at all when he handed in the advantage menu and that it was a counterfeit or expired advantage. That I think that he seems.
Oh, Rick, you mean?
I'm sorry. That I don't think that Rick was surprised at all. I think that he, I think in his mind had like how this was all going to play out in front of the jury pretty well prepared.
Yeah, and I think there was one real hint that I picked up on when I rewatched. It's not really so much what Rick did, but it was what Julie did. And if you go back to after the immunity challenge, they all go back to camp and they're sitting around the fire and Rick's joking around with them. And he's like, so anyone want to work together, you know, as a joke? And they're all like, whatever, dude, like, we're not working with you. And then a minute later, you see Rick standing by the well and you see Ron and Julie approach him. And they come up with this idea like, all right, we're going to vote out Aurora tonight. And then this is the part where it caught my attention was where Ron tells Rick, oh, and Julie knows about the advantage that I gave you. And Julie kind of just like waves it off like, oh, yeah. He told me about that. And that to me would have been the red flag. Like, what? Wait, all right. Why are you just brushing over that? Like, it's no big deal. So if you go back and watch that little clip, it just seemed like she really gave it away in that moment where like she didn't react as if it was an authentic relic that he had in his possession. She almost gave it away in the little comment that she made. And that to me was the giveaway. And I think Rick picked up on that. And that's where I think he started to plan out this whole presentation where he's going to really make sure that the jury knows that he was a victim in all this.
You know, Kellen, I think that the wildest part of all of this, as we're talking about the jury's reaction to Rick Devins, is that Rick had actually nothing to do with the plan that ultimately sent Ron out of the game, which was really like the dazzling move of the night. Yeah, it was great that Rick was going to play his idol, but had Aurora been voted out from that tribal council, I feel like that this is a less dazzling of a move. And it looks like to the jury, like, wow, not only did Rick play the idol, he also got Ron voted out of the game after he gave him that, like, everything played in Rick Devin's favor. And I wonder, maybe for the four people that ended up working together to get Ron out of the game, did they not think through how the jury would perceive it? And maybe could they have knocked, say, Julie out of the game? I guess that they didn't know that the whole thing was going to happen with the advantage menu and that there was going to be so much animosity between Ron and Rick at that tribal council. So I guess they had no way of knowing that it was going to, at the end of the night, be just like a big win for Devins.
Yeah. And don't you think in some way the jury is going to think that I don't think they're even going to know that it wasn't Rick's plan to get Ron out at that time.
Oh, definitely not.
Right. He's just going to get the full credit for, it looks like he orchestrated. He was the victim, but then he orchestrated the whole thing.
Yeah. Everything worked in his favor. I mean, Dom, do you think that when Ron Clark goes to the edge of extinction, that he'll have to clear that up? Like, no, Devins had no idea that he was I told him to vote for Aurora. He didn't know what was happening.
Your Ron Clark is on point as well.
It's okay. It's okay. It's not my best.
Well, here's the problem is that I guess Ron can do what he wants when he gets to edge of extinction. But what's going to come down to is, let's say Victoria is in the final three with Lauren and Aurora, let's just say. You know, it's going to be up to let's do it better. Let's say it's Victoria, Lauren, and Rick. And now it's going to be up to Victoria and Lauren to explain to the jury that it wasn't Rick that pulled that maneuver off. It was them. And you can say it 1,000 times till you're blue in the face. It's you can saying it is one thing. What they perceived and visually saw was another thing. And that's what's going to stick in their mind. So they have an uphill battle trying to, you know, having to be able to explain to the jury that this is what actually happened. I mean, if Rick's out of the game, it may be a lot easier to do at that point. But if they're sitting at the end with Rick, I don't see how anyone's going to talk their way out of that.
Yeah. Kellen, in terms of we've seen some of these big swings go back and forth, that you were on both sides of that in your season, where you didn't want there to be a swing and then you wanted to swing and then couldn't get enough people to jump on board with you. Have you had any takeaways from, you know, how much people are willing to jump ship this season and some of the things that have been successful in getting people to make those swings?
Oh, I mean, I'm just envious of...
Are you jealous you didn't invent pilots and passengers?
Absolutely. Plus, pilots are like super sexy and cool. And I was just talking about my bowels. It's like, so I like definitely got the short end of the stick on the metaphors of the show. I'm like, oh, why couldn't I think of that? But also, just watching how many free agents there are right now, it's like we had two pawns to play with, and because people have made moves so early this season, like, and sometimes I forget, so forgive me if I get this wrong, but aren't most of them flying solo now? Like, no one, the only two people who have been together the whole time and working together is Gavin and Victoria at this point, right?
Well, I think that that's an interesting one. They've been together, but they've never really been presented as close allies on the show. That I felt like after last night, I feel like that Lauren and Victoria are closer than Gavin and Victoria. But Gavin and Victoria have been together for a long time, but we don't see them talk a lot one on one.
We definitely don't, but they've been in that comma. Like, they were in the group of six together, then they, mm-hmm. weren't they in the group of four together?
Yeah, but then there's been times where Gavin was in the six-person alliance when there was a six that voted out David Wright, and then Victoria wasn't part of that. So it's not like the Gavin and Victoria are always in lockstep in the game.
So true. So I guess, like, even back to my, I was a little bit incorrect on setting it up, but the idea that it's not these huge chunks of people moving through the game together. It seems like it's giving everyone a lot more flexibility to make decisions and to have conversations, like the conversation between Lauren and Victoria, to watch the finesse through that and how open they were to have that conversation. I definitely was having flashbacks to like trying to talk Laurel into coming with me. But at this point, who was Victoria trying to pull Lauren from? No one really. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So it's the free agent period is what has been created that I wish I would have created for myself when I played.
Okay. So do you think that this is a new thing? Have we moved beyond, voting blocks and trust clusters? Are we in the official free agent era of Survivor?
I don't know. What is Dom? What do you think?
Well, first of all, Laurel was in my pocket and you were never getting her. Second of all, it might be. It might be this new chaotic way to play the game, because you just – I think there might be paranoia that if I don't take a swing at something, I'm not going to win this game. And again, I don't know how much of our season influenced that, but whatever it is, everyone seems to be making moves now. Yeah. Like I said, some are flashier than others, whether they're subtle or flashy, but everyone's – it doesn't seem like there's any real goat. I mean, I keep hearing Aurora. Like, they're like, oh, Aurora's – like, is Aurora still in the game just because of the natural flow of the game and there were bigger fish to fry, so she's still in it? Or is it because people – think she's a great person to take to the end, that no one will give her any votes? I'm trying to figure that out, because I hear a lot of things on social media like, oh yeah, she's just like, she's just still hanging around because they had to get rid of this person, that person. But I don't know. I feel like even she, I mean, she's doing kind of her own thing as well. She's not really locked into anyone. I think on a week by week basis, we see her kind of make a deal with a different person. I'm not sure how I feel about this giving Gavin the extra vote. Can someone explain this to me? How she said, I'm going to give him the extra vote because in the event that my name comes up in a tie, like, what does that have to do with her using the extra vote?
Okay. So it was the last night that she could use the extra vote. So I do think that the extra vote was burning a hole in her pocket. And I don't think that she wanted to be the person who had the extra vote and then just didn't use it and let it expire. And so I guess there was going to be a scenario where if the one vote was going for Rick Devins, that then they wanted to make sure that there wasn't going to be some sort of a tie break scenario where if they put only one vote. Now, I think they could have gotten away with two votes on Ron, and then that would have done it. But Steven had said, well, what if Ron Clark got scared and then he put another vote for Aurora? Basically, they didn't need to do it. I think it was probably overkill. And it was something that could have then also backfired on her. Also, if Gavin, you know, put an extra couple of votes on Ron or on Aurora.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If the game plan was for Aurora to give the extra vote to Gavin to put on Ron, why couldn't Aurora put it on Ron herself? Why did she have to hand it to Gavin is what my question
because
is.
Because if it ended up with two votes for Ron, two votes Aurora, then on a tie break, then Ron and Aurora won't vote. And so then I'm not sure that she wouldn't be able to vote again on the tie break.
That was what her reasoning was like, if I get locked in the tie vote, when you go to revote, the extra vote is no longer in play. So I think she was trying to make sure, even if there was a tie, that her side would still have that extra.
It doesn't make a ton of sense.
I'm trying to get it. At the end of the day, anyone could write Ron's name down on the extra vote. Am I right or wrong?
Yes.
So why did Gavin have to do it is my question. I don't care if there's a tie or not a tie. It's not like the extra vote can be used in a tiebreaker, like in a revote is what I'm saying, right? You can't use the extra vote in a revote. So
yes,
who cares?
You can't. I could have.
Really?
Mine.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but still, they were planning on whatever. We can move on from this, but it's just didn't make sense to me. If we're gonna write Ron's name down on the extra vote, why does Gavin have to write it?
Yeah, I don't know why she didn't give it to, say, Lauren, who would have been maybe more trusted.
Okay, yeah, but who's more trustworthy than herself is my point.
Look. Aurora has been dying to give this extra vote away since she got it.
Okay? I don't get it. I just don't get it. Someone will explain it to me at some point and tell me I'm crazy. And maybe this is a survivor rule that's existed forever and I've never known about it.
She just didn't want it to get sent to Ghost Island, okay?
Yeah, okay.
Like, here's Aurora's vote that didn't get used in Survivor 38.
At least it'll be Aurora's vote. wait, I wasn't a shot. Are you assuming I was a shot at you, Kellen?
Yes, I assumed very much that it was a shot.
It was not.
The extra vote went to Ghost Island.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. No, I did not. I did not. All right.
Burn me in your subconscious?
I redact that. I would like to also redact that statement.
Okay.
Oh, it's getting heated now.
Getting heated.
Yeah. All right, last night was the family visit on Survivor. Of course, both of you had important parts to play in the family visit on your season. I have to say, full disclosure, I was thinking about the Ghost Island family visit, and I was trying to remember who got voted out on the Ghost Island family visit. I was like, oh, it must have been Kellen. And I said, wait, no, but Kellen made it to 7. And that episode wasn't the one with the family visit. And it took me about a good 5 minutes thinking about it to try to remember who it was. I was like, who was it, the person that went out before Kellen? It wasn't Seabass. It wasn't Angela. And I felt very badly when I looked it up. I could not for the life of me remember who it was. And it was, of course, how could I forget, the great Chelsea.
Yes. Chelsea. Poor girl.
Could not remember for anything.
I believe it. I have a hard time remembering myself, so.
I remember all of it very much. Thank you.
Oh, you're full of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
I would like to touch on something. Yes. Kellen, do you recall this conversation we had leading into loved one's visit? Not actually with me, but with the group. I remember hearing Kellen say on more than one occasion, guys, just let me see my brother Clay and then you can do whatever you want with me after that. True, yes. Or false?
That is true. I would say that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Was it a ploy?
That ploy, or was it honest, or a little of both?
I mean, I think it was a little bit of both, right? Like, I knew that you and Wendell, like, anytime you guys were getting sniffing out anyone making moves against Navidi, like the way you guys took out Des right away and all that stuff, that I would be toast. So it was a little bit, I just felt so much safer playing that, like, I mean, I've said it before, but like the mother bear of the Navidi family. And I think talking about my brother in that way and talking about the loved ones visit in that way, I felt like it was really my persona of like, we're all together, we're all purple, and we're all going to get our family here and let's do this together. I would say it was like 60%, 40% strategy and 60%. Like, I really did want that moment for my brother.
Of course you wanted that moment, but I will say that after the loved one visit episode, I think that's when the claws came out.
Yeah. Now, Kellen, did you invent the Ron Clark strategy of, hey, let's just play for the loved one's visit?
I mean, practically, yeah. I am like a Survivor legend. I
create game changer.
The idea of playing to the loved one's visit.
Yes. Yeah. This is amazing. Because I do think that, Ron, he was, I love comma. We should play for the family visit. Won't that feel so great when we're all here together from comma with our loved ones? Won't that feel so good? So yeah, I mean, that there's some similarities.
There is. I mean, me and Ron Clark, just twinsies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought that this was a great observation from the great YouTuber Peridium, who tweeted about how, I like how Ron used the let's just get to the family visit as a strategy and it didn't work. And then he makes it to the family visit and is promptly voted out. Survivor at its finest.
Look at that. That would almost be a thing if the same thing happened to Kellen.
Would it be a thing?
It would be, yeah, it would be a trend or whatever we would call it. It would be a thing of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because the great Chelsea was the bigger target and had to go.
Well, the claws came out because I was backed into a corner.
Don't put me in a corner. I'll kill you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we saw that really the impetus for the big move last night was, Victoria was saying like, oh, well, that was very telling who Ron took with him on the family reward. And if I recall, Kellen, that you too were upset about the decisions that were made by the winners of the loved one's visit.
Absolutely.
Those boys.
Absolutely. The move was for us to get together and pull Donathan over and take a shot. Like, if we were playing to win, all of us should have done that. And I don't know how everyone else wasn't just like super effing fired up. Like I was so pissed back at camp that day and just being like, can you believe what they just did? Like right in front of our faces? Like, this is so ridiculous. I'm willing to go down swinging because I'm not going to sit here and take this. Mm-hmm. And I think Ange was with me. Chelsea, she knew, she was like on the chopping block. So man, I just couldn't get Laurel fired up enough. Couldn't get her fired up enough.
Yeah. Maybe she needed to have her brother came. Maybe she needed like her boyfriend or something to like get her like the loved ones that you want to see more.
Well, I don't know what. Yeah, what could we have done?
get her more mad.
I was like, Laurel, our brothers were like, I could see, like, we had the two brothers. They were like looking at each other. They're definitely friends. Like, I know your brother wants you to come back and work with me. Like, they just do.
I got an idea for you, Kellen. Let's not try creating a new alliance on day 32.
Some of us planted that seed
a few weeks earlier, and you just came with this great idea. That's day 32. Maybe
you guys weren't playing in the free agent era.
Oh, it was still trust clusters and all that nonsense.
I was before my time. I was trying to play free agent. You know, I was just before my time.
Now, who was it though that won the loved ones? Was it you, Dom, or was it Wendell?
Sebastian won.
Oh, Seabass won it.
Yeah, I was right on his tail.
Okay.
And then,
yes.
And then, you know, he picked all the boys.
Yes.
Which did not go over well.
did not go over well.
Let me tell you something. I just want to say, I was fighting for my life to win that thing, because if I didn't show full effort, my wife would have legitimately clawed my throat with her nails. But at the same time, when I didn't win, there was a wave of relief that came over me. And I mean, you see it. You see the effect. Look at what happened. I don't know how much of an impact it had on Ron's departure from the game, mm-hmm. but it puts a damper on your game. I mean, I don't know. Kellen, you tell me. What was your impression of Sebastian after that? Or was it just like, oh, whatever? I don't know, because I went, so I don't know. But I just remember how angry it was.
Oh, of like how he felt and stuff dealing with not taking us.
I'm saying, how was it like, did you feel animosity towards him specifically or just the group of the boys that went?
Well, so I didn't at first, because a while back I had told Sebastian, like, people do not know how close we are. We cannot pick each other for rewards. Like, you have to stay in the boys club and I have to stay out here, mm-hmm. and we won't pick each other. And so when he didn't choose me, I was like, oh, good job, Sebastian. Like, I was so upset, but also like, oh, okay, he did it because I told him not to, all of that. But then when he got back to camp, like, and a couple of days later, we were talking about it, and he was like, I'm so sorry I didn't bring you. Like, I feel really bad about it. And I was like, it's okay. We like said we weren't going to take each other on rewards. And in true Seabass fashion, he was like, oh, I didn't remember that we made that. I just really liked Donathan's story.
Yeah.
And then I was pissed.
But was there any talk of we should vote Sebastian out because he was the person that didn't take us on the reward?
No.
And because we're obviously not in his plans.
I don't think so. I mean, I was trying to protect Sebastian. I thought I could get him to swing with me when I needed him to. Mistake. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't even bring it up. I wonder what would have happened. I wonder if Laurel would have been willing to flip if that's what we would have been saying.
Mm-hmm. I have a new theory. I'm convinced that Laurel would have flipped. Anytime you guys presented an idea to vote me out, she was on board with it. But anytime the idea was to vote Wendell out, she was like, let me see. Let me think about it. So I don't know if it, but simultaneously.
Like, is that way, Kellen? Is that true?
I mean, I don't remember her ever being on board for either of them, but definitely true that maybe her ears would perk up a little bit more if we were talking about Dom.
Mm-hmm. Well, why didn't it happen?
Because I think she would get like this second thought and then later reveal the game plan to me, mm-hmm. right before tribal council time.
Yeah.
And she would always say to me, like, directly, like, Kellen, Like, why would I switch with you? Like, you aren't going to be loyal to me. And it just wasn't enough to say, like, but you're not going to beat that. Like, you aren't going to win. And I remember being so frustrated with her out there. And then when they showed her saying that on TV, like, I know it would be better chances for me to win if I flip, but it's more likely I get to the end if I don't. And she was telling that truth out there.
But, you know, we've really seen this bear out where people are, you know, are making the moves that are not being successful. I really feel like that the lesson that Survivor wants you to take away, that, you know, it is better to, you know, make the move that doesn't ultimately work than potentially wait too long to make one of these moves, Tom.
Yeah, that's should be the lesson every season. I'm a big believer in swing, swing, swing. Even me, I'm a victim of not swinging. You know what I mean? And I think the future of the game is really going to be people that run headfirst right through this game from mm-hmm. start to finish, and it'll be a lot of bumping and smashing into things along the way. But at the end, there'll be one person who ran faster through the game and harder through the game than the other two people. And I think at some point the game will be like the final three or the final four will be. It depends. It depends if they continue to cast quiet players or not. You know what I mean? Like, you'll always have the seasons where you have these really big players, big characters, people making moves, big flashy moves. But there's always on that same season, you'll always have the quiet people sitting back, waiting their turn, not pulling the trigger on things. So I don't know. I'd like to see, obviously, I think everyone would like to see that the game is full, you know, more full of people who are playing harder and taking bigger swings. And I don't know if that's going to change with the way casting is going now. And I know there's been some changes there, but I just feel like it's going to be a balls to the wall game from this point forward. I hope. I mean, it seems like it's hard to really keep track of what's going on right now in this season. But I think that's because so many people are deciding to do things.
Yeah. Are we in danger of not being able to follow what's going on? And I'd say this is one of the more complicated seasons that I have been covering of the show. And I think that this is, you know, season 19 of me podcasting about the show. Kellen, if everybody is, you know, making all these moves combined with all these, you know, advantages and everything that's going on, is it almost getting too hard to follow for the viewer?
Definitely for picking up new viewership. Like, even in our season, which was a fairly slow season, people who just watched Who I Knew just to watch me were like, we don't really know what's happening. Like, there's all this terminology and what are these different idols and things. And so for new people to come in and watch the show and understand what's happening in the nuance, they're going to have to take the show to 90 minutes at least, I would think. Because it just jumps around too much. I'll tell you, for the first time ever, maybe I've been really struggling to remember who was on what starting tribe, mm-hmm. Which I guess is maybe a fun thing. That's what everybody wants, right? Is to not have people keep their original alliances, but it is getting pretty fast. And because it's not like a basketball game where there are like rules and people do similar things. It's just people can do whatever they want. They can be human and be as extreme as possible. And I think a microcosm example of how it's getting a little out of control is, maybe I sound like an old lady, but I don't really like it that they let people get into groups and talk at tribal.
Okay.
It, you know, it's too hard. Like with the Julia tribal, it was crazy, but you can't really pick up what's happening. And so I feel like that's a microcosm example of everything getting more complicated and moving a lot more quickly. And it's harder for the viewer to follow.
All right. Now, you two both played in a recent season, and there was even a little bit of that in a tribal council that neither of you attended in the Stephanie Gonzalez tribal council, where she was getting up and moving around. Dominic, do you think that's a problem for the show?
it's a problem for the show because the viewer, the game is essentially a game of human poker, and the viewer wants to partake in the game. They want to see how crafty they are and if they can read on what's going on, and they want to participate from their couch in the best way that they can. And when you have these chaotic moments and it's just jumbled and you can't break it down into what is going on, it takes that element away from the viewer who's trying to really be a part of the experience in determining who's going to get voted out. So for me, I think that's hurting the viewership. Again, I don't know that it's, you know, they're losing viewers over it, but I would say as a fan and someone who watches the show, I want to be able to figure out and say this person's going home because this, and this. Now, I know there's always misdirection through the edit, and they're going to do that to keep you guessing and get yourself to the end. But there's no reason why we have to have these real confused moments in the game where, like, you just have no idea what's going on. But I guess if it's part of the storyline, then I guess you kind of have to keep it in there. But I'm with Kellen. I'm sorry. I'm with Kellen about these 90-minute episodes. Why are we not doing 90-minute episodes, right?
I mean, it's just hard to find a half an hour show that's going to be on after, but maybe they could do some sort of a live, like, after show. That would be exciting.
What do they have on now? I know they have the Amazing Race right now, right? But otherwise, it's like the 450th version of NCIS, right? It's like NCIS Edge of Extinction. Don't even bring your guns here.
Is that what they say? On NCIS?
I don't know.
Has this analogy been made? I know the Survivor loves analogies, but I feel like that the game is a little bit like musical chairs, where basically there's going to be one less seat at Tribal Council each time. And now it's just like a mad dash for everybody just to find a seat. And it's not necessarily like you can follow the storyline of like any group of people that's going to work together. It's like the music's about to stop, and then we just need a, you know, one person out of there, and everybody's just like in a mad scramble to find their seat for the next Tribal Council.
I'm sorry. Isn't that what happened with the Julia vote, though? Didn't like there end up being like a stand up consensus? Like, are we just going to vote Julia out? Yes, or no?
That's the thing.
That's what it seems like, right? That's exactly what that ended up being. And like, she was the poor girl standing there, like, looking for a chair, saying, all right, thanks, guys. I appreciate you ganging up on me. So there's going to be moments like that in the game now. That's what it's come to, where, it's, like you said, it's just a mad dash for that last seat.
Mm-hmm. Kellen, I want to ask you about the reactions from the jury. I know you said you don't like it when people are walking around at Tribal Council. Do you think that the jury is getting too out of control?
No, I love it.
You love it.
I just have so much, even I cannot understand what they're going through. I can't have empathy for them, but I can have sympathy for them, and they have nothing to do for days on end. And like, they're like going to the Super Bowl every three nights and getting to watch and just watching them enjoy it. I think it really shows, if you take a moment and think about it, it really shows how little action they're seeing and stimuli that they're getting, like truly living on a deserted island. So I love watching them have a good time. I think it's going to make it really interesting to see how the votes go down. If I were out there on the edge of extinction, I know this would not be for the viewers, but y'all know I wasn't playing for the viewers. But shouldn't they all just make a pact? Like whichever one of us gets back in the game, if we make it to the end, we're all voting, like we're a crew. I wonder if that's something they're thinking out there, but I really like watching their bonds, and it's like their big night out every three nights. They get to go to the movies, and they deserve to have a little bit of enjoyment time. And it's been fun to watch the players in the game really amp up how much they are interacting with the jury. And that's what it's about, right? These are the people who get to choose who wins the money. So to see more of that dynamic, I find it really interesting.
Kellen, do you think that that actually has happened of whoever comes back from the edge of extinction, that person is going to win?
I think if they make it to the final three, I think they will have like made some pact. I mean, wouldn't you do that, Dom, if you were in there? If we were all out there on the edge of extinction, wouldn't we be like, if one of us gets back in until the end, screw all those guys. We're going to get the money.
I guess that's possible. I don't think that's what's happening in reality. I think there is, let's think of this, Kellen. When you guys were at Ponderosa, I mean, look how the votes went for Wendell and myself, 5-5. So there wasn't this big consensus at Ponderosa for you guys, right? Half of you thought one way, half of you thought another. But think about not having that distraction of relaxing on a hammock and partying a little bit and maybe going to another island and, you know, whatever it is that they're doing at Ponderosa that they're not getting to do this time. So now it's almost like they're just absorbed purely in the game, or they're thinking about home, or they're thinking about the game, or they're thinking about home. And now I'm getting the impression that there's a lot of conversation about who the group thinks is running the game. And then as another person gets eliminated, that conversation will just get bigger and bigger. But I feel like it's going to have an impact on the final three vote in a way that it's going to be really lopsided. The majority of the people are going to vote for one specific person. That's the impression I'm getting. But I don't know, because there's all these new, you know, the twists coming up with the final four fire making and coming back into the game from Edge of Extinction. I don't know. Like, think about it this way. Like, if let's say the consensus believes that Rick should win the game, but let's say Victoria gets voted out, goes to Edge of Extinction, comes back in from winning the challenge, and then wins fire making. That'll have a huge change in the consensus of everyone voting one way for Rick. Now they might be like, whoa, this Victoria really just did a lot to get to the end of this game. So there's a lot of things that still need to happen for us to really figure out how it's going to happen. But I would say at the present moment, there's a lot of large group conversation regarding the people at Edge of Extinction thinking about who deserves to win this game at this point. But who knows what will happen in the next few tribals.
I don't even know how you do the calculus on some of this stuff where, you know, there's so much has happened in this season. When it comes down to the final three, you know, these people, and everybody talks about like their resume, but it's like, okay, well, I made this big move. I came back from the Edge of Extinction. Okay, well, I made this big move and I won these three challenges. And then I also made fire at the final four. Like, it's just, there's so many milestones and accomplishments that, well, I had and I got the extra vote, and then I won these two challenges and a reward. And then I had this one medium sized move, but I don't know how necessarily that we're going to get through this final tribal council and then have 13 people ask questions.
Yeah, I think that a lot of it's going to have to do with just who makes you feel good as well. You know, I think that's right. It's the truth.
I think that's going to be all it comes down to.
Yeah.
Isn't that always what it comes down to, though?
Yeah. I mean, most of the time, some people, I mean, I don't know if that's entirely true, because I don't think Chris Noble liked me more than Wendell.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think they bonded with Wendell better than they bonded with me, but they, for whatever reason, they respected my game more. So I don't know. I would say I would say 80% of the people there will vote in favor of who makes them feel better and who they like more, you know, but you never know. You might be able to switch another one or two people if you have a really brilliant game that you can speak of, and if you speak well, if you're good at delivering your final, you know, layout of everything you've done and why you've been out there playing, and if you can put a little emotion into it and really display something, you will be able to switch people. I mean, and even in my final tribal, I know I switch people's minds, and I know Wendell switch people's minds. You know, that's basically what we heard. Some people were locked and loaded, like, no, this is the way I'm voting. But there were people that were going one way and switched on both sides. And so it is possible to sell yourself when you're out there. You just have to, like I said, you have to have a good story. You have to be able to sell it well. And you have to have a likability factor, which is the most important part of it.
Okay, I want to start to bring in questions from the listeners of the podcast. And let me first thank Brendan Fitzpatrick, who thought that maybe the two of you might consider starting your own podcast in the future. What do you guys think of a Survivor podcast called the Dom and Kellen podcast?
Yeah, I saw that. That was pretty clever.
It's good.
Right. I
very
love
catchy.
It.
Very catchy.
Very catchy. You sound, yeah, it sounds like something I've heard before.
Nathan Fuhrer wants to ask Kellen and Dom, two of my favorite players and RJP guests. Around the loved ones visit, we often hear people say they're inspired to change. What are some of the most significant changes you've each made in your life post-Survivor? Could be profound, trivial, or anything in between. And this was something, we heard Julie say this last night, where she said, oh, I'm going to be a better wife and a mother, and you'll see. And I do think that when we are out there on the island, we think a lot about, you know, how we're going to be different people when we come back from the show. But do either of you have anything that turned out to be sort of like a lasting change from when you played the game?
Kellen?
Yeah, definitely. I think the one thing that's this, there are many things. I mean, me and Dom's relationship is one of those things which we could talk about a little bit, but the one thing that I decided out there, which was, we played the game like, if you won $1 million, what would you do with it? Obviously a lot. Mm-hmm. But out in the real world, people play the game of, if you win the lottery, what are you going to do tomorrow? And almost everyone says something completely different than what was on their docket for the next day. And I just decided out there while I was looking up at the stars at night that I don't want to live a life where if I won the lottery the next day, I just want to drop everything and start over. So I really try and live my life in a way of like, of course, it's not all perfect days and you can't just throw away all responsibilities, but I just never want to be one of those people that just complains, is in a rut, and is not willing to make changes. So take risks. So if tonight you win the lottery, tomorrow you'll at least want to do half of what you were planning on doing. So I think that's the biggest change in my life that I somehow, I don't know if I read it in the stars or found it within myself, or I actually think I was inspired by all of these people who I met and played with. Like, Dom lives this amazing big life with his beautiful family, and Sebastian loves his fishing life, and all of these people were so inspiring and going for big dreams, and I decided I wanted to be one of those people too. So yeah, I said it was short. It was still long, Kellen style, but that's it.
Mm-hmm. What is your dream, Kellen? Can you share with us?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely want to start my own business someday, and I do it a little bit on the side. And it's so like cheesy in the world right now to have like life coaches or career coaches or whatever. So I'm still navigating it. But I think I want to be like a transition coach where I help people. You know, I've been through a divorce. I went on reality TV. I have changed my career many times. And so my dream is to build a business where I can help people find their best selves through transition.
Okay. All right.
Inspired, Bob?
Yes, that was very good. Give you a bell.
I just want to say, if I win the lottery, I'm burning my house to the ground, driving to work, throwing down the gauntlet, giving everybody the bird, and driving to Vegas alone.
Alone.
Alone. I'll put the kids up in a hotel somewhere. Let's not be ridiculous.
Oh, Dom, that's just not all true. You need some of it.
Mostly true.
Okay. let me give you some more questions. Okay, Aaron wants to know, ask Dominic, if he ever played with War Dog, how do you think that you would interact with him in the game?
War Dog. That's interesting. We have a lot of the same characteristics. I would say that we'll either work together or we'll try to make sure the other doesn't outsmart the other, right? So we'll be on defense. But I think the one thing that I can say is true for both of us is that if we think we can beat each other at the end, we'd probably work together. If we thought that, I'd have to know that he also thought that. You know what I mean? So in that process, we'd probably kill each other. I don't know. It's too tough. We share kind of the same mindset. He's I'm not going to say he's,
he seems so much more erratic than you.
Yeah. I was going to say he seemed like, yeah, a little more than I think I had erratic moments, but then like the next day I'm like, chill.
Mm-hmm.
Where I noticed War Dog would have a big night. I noticed War Dog would have a big night. And then like, I think that one example is when he talked to Gavin the next day and kind of talked down him a little. Like I would have just stepped away and been like, Gavin, you're right, man. You know, whatever it is. But again, you don't know the circumstances in the moment. There's a lot of things you got to take into consideration. But I don't know. It's hard to tell. You don't really know somebody till you're in that environment with them and fighting the good fight with them, and then you can determine if it's someone you want to work with or not.
Okay. This is a.
Can we talk about the wand dog
the wand off?
No. The war. Can we talk about the war dog in the re bonus clip?
Yes. Okay. Did you see this secret scene?
Kelly, did you see it?
No, I didn't.
War dog's like, Reem, move over. I want to go to sleep. He's like, dude, this is where I sleep. Pack your shit and go sleep in the ocean. it was the best thing I ever saw.
You want me to see if I can play? Let me see if I can play it. So this was one of the clips from the secret scenes from this week, because that we heard at the end of the episode last week where they teased it, where Reem was like, dude, I promise you that you can bet your rear end you're gonna hear it from me tomorrow. And I guess then that's sort of like this conversation picks up where that left off. This is from the secret scenes from this past week. Okay.
Listen, dude, you've insulted a lot of people, and I'm going to be kind and not say anything to you this evening, but you can bet your rear end you're going to get it tomorrow from me, just so you know. Set expectations.
I'm glad you're still bitter, Reem. I'm not bitter at all.
No, War Dog, I'm not bitter. I think that you're a jerk. I don't have the energy to deal with fake BS. If I got a beef with you, I can't be fake about it. We're oil and water, so why are you even sitting next to me? Water's over there. Roll on over to it.
I'm not sitting where I want to sit, man.
You are an ass. I don't want to deal with your tonight. I will deal with it tomorrow.
No, go over tonight.
No. I will go over it when I feel like going over it.
Then in that case, don't go over it at all. Then
so I won't feel like hearing it. Tell me what I am going to do.
You can talk, and I won't have to listen. Reem is crazy, but I don't want to let anybody else be a Debbie Downer on me. It's tough, but you know something? Right now, we're still in the game, and I'm grateful that I even have a sliver of opportunity moving forward.
Scoot over.
Not moving right now.
Don't talk to me like that, all right? Well, this is my bed. As far as I'm concerned, this is my island. I was here first. You're an unwelcome guest at this point.
Dude, this is my island. I got here first. You voted me out. You sent me here. And now you're up in my space that I
pack your shit.
I've got squatter's rights. This is my bed and you're here. Oh my God. I just got here. Like, I don't care. You can check out anytime you'd like.
Poor guy,
you can never leave.
Ass kicked. He just got his ass kicked and he walks into that. I would die. I would have raised that mast right there, but like, get me the F out of here. This lady's crazy.
War Dog is going to raise the sail.
I thought I could do it. I can't take 3 hours here. This is worse.
Ron's going to come there tomorrow and be like, you got to pay me $3 million to deal with this woman.
If you want me to stay here on this island, you need to pay me $3 million.
I had to get that in there. That was great.
Yeah, that was great. I don't know why that didn't make the cut.
That's everything right there.
I don't know how that was not on the episode. That was, and they promised that it was going to be there. They teased it.
Oh, and don't get into the. I, for some reason, people on Long Island had the first 15
minutes. Yeah, what happened?
No audio.
What happened there, Dom?
Oh my God, I don't know. I didn't even watch last night. I ended up watching at 4 a.m. this morning on CBS All Access. No, I turned it on. And you hear the commercial playing, and then they show the Edge of Extinction flag or the emblem, and then you hear the music to the show, like the background music, and they're talking, and there's no words coming out. And I'm like, is this part of the show? is this like a new twist? I'm supposed to figure out what's going on. I'm like, I got it on DVR, I'm rewinding it, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? And then I put it on Twitter, and then people are like, yeah, there's an outage or something. I'm like, oh my God. So I'm like, I'll watch tomorrow. I'm not waiting around. So.
Listen, dude, I want to see the show and hear it. Why can't we get the sound in the show? This is the most lame thing I've ever seen. This is worse than when I had Game of Thrones on and I could hear it and I couldn't see it.
See it. Yeah. Let's not talk about that, please. But and then my lovely wife was like, put the subtitles on, and I'm trying to watch it with subtitles. I'm like, this is not working. the letters are typing on the television 10 minutes after the conversation is over. I was so frustrated. I was going to choke somebody. So that was that.
Okay. This is a question from Sarah on Twitter. She wants to know, is Devin's actually a good player or is he a lucky one? He made a showy move tonight, but was using the idol thinking that he voted out Aurora. It wasn't exactly a powerful move. If he had sent her to the edge of extinction, where would he have gone next with Ron and Julia still in as a pair? Kellen, can you speak to that at all about Rick Devin's? Can you rate him?
Well, I think he must be managing personalities super well because he's had hands in voting people out and such and should have enemies. And it doesn't seem like he does. So I think the way that he's been able to make moves and be fairly feisty and is seeming to not have a lot of people disliking him is great. The part of is he lucky or is he good? I think every good Survivor player gets a little bit of luck. So I think the answer is probably both. I do think Rick is a good Survivor player. Dom, do you?
I think he's amazing. I think his only issue is that he's too good and he's letting everybody know how good he is, which now puts a target on him. The truly good player can get through it. And the thing is, like I said, if he can get to the end, he's winning the game hands down. Everybody loves him. Even Aurora said it. Let me see. She said, I think I wrote this down. Yeah. Aurora said he knows we all love him, but he's got to go.
Mm-hmm.
So even at camp, like I'm sure at camp, he's making them laugh. He's having a good time with them. He has that real lighthearted personality. Like, guys, I get it. I know you got to get rid of me. Do what you got to do. It's just a game. He's not being bitter about his future that's to come, you know, like knowing that they want him out. He's not acting all hussy about it and stomping his feet and making a scene about it. He's saying, look, I get it. You know, it is what it is. And, you know, I'll do everything I can on my part to prevent that from happening. And I hope you guys could understand that that's my job to do that. And in delivering his message that way, they're like, all right, we'll try to take him out. And if we can't, we got to give him props because he's still here and he shouldn't be. You know what I mean? So I think he's an amazing player in that aspect that he looks for idols. He's super creative. And his ability to perform is like one we've never seen at Tribal Council. That's for sure. I think his downfall is really just that he's too good and they know it. And that's what's putting the target on him.
I think that the thing that is not going in his favor is just that, you know, his number is up, that everybody knows. And he's sort of like in a position, I feel like a lot like Ben in Survivor 35, where everybody just wants him out. And it just seems like that week after week, really since David went out of the game, that every vote, it's like, OK, well, how do we get Rick Devin's out? And by some combination of him winning immunity or him having the idol this week, it's just that they have not been able to do it. And I think that he's just been on this this real hot streak. I think everybody knows, you know, how good he is. And I think that really from the point of that, you know, pilots versus passengers, you know, vote out of Julia, I think that really he's sort of been seen as this person who is, you know, one of the threats when War Dog tried to make his all threat alliance. Devin's was included in that group. So I don't think he's been mean-spirited or, you know, has done anything to, you know, alienate anybody out there. So I think that he's in really good standing with the group. But I think they just know, all right, we can't beat this guy and we need to get him out one way or another. I don't know what his path is to get to the final three, but I do feel like he's got an amazing case if he gets there, Dom.
Yeah, I think the other thing is a lot of viewers are I already hear on social media there's a fear that there's going to be another Ben ending, and they're like, oh, if like, how is it possible Rick's going to make it to the end unless, you know, amazing things happen for him. But you know what? There are a lot of there's a good way Rick can get to the end, and it's going to require a lot of falling and getting back up. In other words, you know, if he gets voted out, goes to Edge of Extinction, and then wins the challenge to get back in the game, and then does perform at Final Fire Making or something along those lines.
And he still has to get through two votes if he gets back in the game.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If somehow he can pull that off, in other words, we don't want it to look like we want to feel that if he does win this game, like he had to fight tooth and nail to get there. We don't want it to just be like he finds an idol. If he's going to make it to the end, it's important, I think, to the viewer that he has to take a beating and then come back from that, you know, and again, there's those opportunities that are ahead for him to have that story. It's a lot. He has to accomplish a lot. It's going to be very tough.
Yeah,
but we'll see. But I don't know.
Kellen, I said this on the know-it-alls last night. I mean, that idol that he found in this episode, that was not like a cheapie where it was like, oh, give me a break. Oh, Rick Devins just happened to find the idol. Like, he had to go and climb a bunch of trees in the pitch black while everybody was sleeping in the shelter underneath. I don't know how people didn't wake up.
I don't, Dom, that's right where our shelter was too.
That
right?
was our tree. Yeah. I climbed that tree once.
Whenever he was sleeping?
While we were all sleeping?
No. I just did it like it was an off day. We had nothing going on. So I'm like, let me climb this tree. And then I just started having flashbacks of past seasons of people falling out of trees. And I was like, let me get down. I'm not going to be that guy.
It's a pretty tall. I mean, at that point, it's probably
it's probably 10 to 12 feet up, I'd say. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty high up. So yeah, it was so fun. Oh, that was a great scene. And Rob, I loved your Kool-Aid man last night.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Falling through.
So, I don't think Steven knows what that is. I don't think that he drinks Kool-Aid.
But that made it even more funny because you just like kept doubling down, even though Steven was not along for the ride.
I was hoping the listeners would know what I was talking about.
Oh, I loved it.
Thank you.
I loved it as well.
Thank you. John Densford wants to know, if Survivor 38 is a direct response of the results of Survivor 36, how will future seasons directly respond to season 38? How does the game evolve from here? Do either of you have any thoughts about this?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with how filming goes. Okay, so they film back to back and then there's a big period of waiting. So I think the even number seasons come on. Like if you're a 38 or a 40 or a 42 or a 44, you're going to leave to film just as a season is ending.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it applies to the odd number as it doesn't have as big of
so
an impact.
So the people that played in Survivor 39, I think they saw David versus Goliath, but they haven't seen all of this season. And the people that play in season 40 will have seen, you know, seasons 37 and 38, but they won't have seen season 39. So,
yeah,
you know, the game is always like, you know, lagging behind a little bit.
Yeah. And what I mean by that, though, is like I said, I think if you just come off watching a very fresh season and you're about to go out and play the game as a new player or a returnee or whatever it may be, I think you want to be part of the evolution of the game. And if you see what recently just happened and there's some impactful moments that you just witnessed, you want to do your part to continue to grow that evolution in the game. So you know, like I said, I think there always will be an impact on the new players that just witnessed a previous season right before they went out to play the game.
Okay. All right. Let me play a question. This is from one of our listeners in Chicago.
Hi, Rob. This is Kellen calling from Chicago. First time caller. So my family does a top 10 survivor pool every year, and not one of us put Kelly Wentworth in the top three. Have we been underestimating her, and does she have a chance to win this whole thing? Sneaky, sneaky.
Kellen, what do you think? I mean, Kelly Wentworth, she is out of the game. She's on the edge of extinction. Do you think she has a shot to win this thing, as the caller suggested?
I mean, you just never know what sneaky Kelly Wentworth might do. Just be the one that wins that challenge, comes back in, and makes her way to the end.
Can't believe her family didn't have her in the top three as one of the returning players this season.
Oh my God. Her family is just...
When is that from? When is that voicemail from?
Only like 3 years ago.
You're a dweeb, Kellen. You're a little bit of a dweeb.
A little bit?
Hey, yo, Robbio.
No.
Yes. All day. Do it.
Okay.
Did you know that I was a Survivor fan? Like a total Survivor nerd when you met me out there? Or dumb?
Not when I met you out there, but I have listened to all of your podcasts, so I know you're a nerd.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, but I just meant, I was like trying to play it off like I didn't really know the game, you know?
Yeah, you did real well. Hanging out with Bradley and talking about every season.
What is this show that I'm a part of? What is this?
Right. What is going on? Oh, I wanted to tell some about when we came home in the airport.
What?
I don't think I'm allowed to. Remember the bunch of kids got off the airplane with us from Fiji, and they were like, "Did you guys just get back from filming Survivor?" And Kellen's like, "What? What's Survivor?" I'm like, "Kellen, you're so bad at this." I don't know if I was supposed to put that in there.
I think you're okay.
Break the rules.
Okay. Randy Newpel wants to know, hey-o, Kellino, what do you think of Kelly Wentworth's chances to get back into the game? Sneaky, sneaky.
Hey-o, Randy-o. I would say her chances are about zero.
Why are you so low?
I don't know. I just don't feel like that's who's going to be the one to pull out the challenge. I don't know why.
Why? You just have a bad juju for Kelly Wentworth here?
No, I feel like the way her story is set up, I think she kind of went out and that was the end of her story, sadly. You know me, I'd love to have Kelly Wentworth back on my screen every day, but I just don't think she'll be able to pull off the challenge win. I don't know why. That's my instincts, but
Yeah.
You think it'll be her?
No, I don't. You know, it's hard to really have a good read on who it's going to be. It's also very hard to have a good read on, you know, the winner and the final three.
Right.
Very hard right now.
What do we think the like the blueprint is for the remainder of the game as far as people coming and going with Edge of Extinction? Are we saying that there's going to be the six in the next episode, one goes to Edge of Extinction, and then at the beginning of the finale,
yes,
one comes back in, and then it's a full finale with six people again?
Yes, that's what I think is going to happen. I think that basically Jeff is going to be live with the studio audience at the finale, and then he's going to throw it to, we're going to be setting up for the Edge of Extinction challenge for one of the returnees to get back into the game.
Wow, that is a lot to get through.
Yeah, because then that person is going to come back, and then there's going to be a tribal council, and that's going to be final. You will go from six to five, and then we have to go from five to four. Then another
fire making challenge,
and then an immunity challenge, and then fire making, and then the final tribal council with 13 person jury. So I've been saying, I think it's going to be like a 10-minute reunion show. I think that the reunion is going to start later than it's ever started. I think, you know, you're going to get the reunion like from 10:40 to 10:50. And then Jeff will say, around 10:52. All right, let's see what's coming up in Survivor 39. Good night, everybody. Yeah. And then we'll check in with, any new CBS shows. I think it's going to be a real short reunion show.
Yeah, probably.
Well, why wouldn't maybe there's no chance that they'll take someone out halfway through in this next episode and then do the challenge to win back in, like at the end, maybe. That would save some time.
I think they've got that extra hour to play with from the reunion show. I just think that the reunion show is going to get like the short stick here, and it's going to be real tight at the reunion. I think maybe if it's two segments, I'd be surprised.
I mean, they don't talk to the survivors anymore anyway, so I'd rather just have it be more show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're going to get a lot of show. I think that's going to be the compromise there. Lemuel on Twitter said, I have a question. Don't you think it was weird that the final seven, only Rick was looking for the idol, and we haven't seen an idol been played throughout the whole season? What are your thoughts on that, other than the one that David played?
You never know. People probably were looking for idols. If I had to guess, you know, they're going to show the person who's finding it. What do you think, Kellen? Right? I mean, it's not like people, especially that close, you got a lot of time during the day. People are looking. I don't care what they say, but it is surprising that the season didn't have that much relic play. I thought it was a nice, refreshing component this season to not see every tribal someone's pulling something out of their pocket.
Mm-hmm. I like they say relic play. I feel like that's very Ghost Island.
Yeah, I'm stuck. I'm stuck.
I've never heard anybody else use that term before.
Well, because it's, you know, relics are just advantages or idols. Any type of anything is a relic to me now. So,
yeah,
haunting us,
haunting
forever.
You
forever.
Yeah. Let's see. This is a question that I have from one of the listeners, and let me see if I can find the person who asked it. But the question was, is there a way to improve the Ghost Island concept?
Kellen, any ideas, Kellen?
I mean...
Have Kellen vote for Dom, and Dom wins.
Yes, that would have. Definitely
I think the question was the literal Ghost Island.
I know.
I'm kind of over the whole like extra island, extra place to go, and all of that for now. I don't really the whole idea of like Edge of Extinction. I don't really like the idea of it. There's something about like winning your way back into the game and getting to the end, but isn't the whole point of Survivor not getting voted out? So if you got voted out, didn't you already lose? Like, I'm a little bit of a bitter Betty about some of this like extra frou-frou island stuff. But as far as making Ghost Island, do they mean like making our season better, or like if they were going to do Ghost Island?
If they were going to do some sort of like a second Ghost Island version.
I don't know, man. I mean, I have loved that they brought some of the old challenges back this season. I kind of wish that they would have done Ghost, as they've done the Ghost Island relics, that the challenges would have been like iconic challenges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really my only idea.
Okay. Yeah, this season, I mean, at least this week, we had two sort of like throwback challenges. So that's something.
It's an idea.
It's an idea. Okay. This is a question from Alex, who's a new patron in the Facebook group. Alex says, I feel like Wendell not being part of the family visit was very strategic. Do you feel like this actually helped him win the game? Now, he had the opportunity to go leave the challenge and go to Ghost Island. Was it advertised that there would be an advantage on Ghost Island?
Yes.
Okay.
Jeff mentioned that. Yeah.
Okay. Was that something? Was that a point in his favor, Kellen?
No, that's probably the most mad I was ever at Wendell.
Yes, because why does he get to go and go to Ghost Island, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, he gets picked, gets to go on the loved ones visit, and then he's like, peace out, see you later, Dad. I mean, I eventually came around to it of like, at the end, you're like, okay, he was just playing the game. We all get to see our family in like 7 days. It's really not that big of a deal. Good for him for keeping his head in the game. But I was I mean, I was.
Yes, I have a clip of that. I think. Hold on. Let me see. Yeah.
Wendell.
Okay. Oh, no. I think that was Angela.
That's Angela. Yeah.
That was Angela.
The three boys step right up and go off on reward and go off to go silent to get advantages and leave us back here, I don't know, to clean the dishes.
Wendell. And guess what he's doing right now? Laughing at your faces? No. Because he's getting another advantage. Hold on, and he doesn't even care that he wrecked someone else's family visit, which pisses me off.
Wait one second. When did I ever ask you to do dishes? Okay. Not once.
No, you not once. To do dishes, but Dom, you were always like, "Oh, we're gonna get into it now."
Yeah.
You were always like,
and who was leaving all those coffee cups around the island all the time?
I clean those coffee cups every morning. I boil them in the pot. No, all right, go ahead. Let's get into it.
A lot of work, but you always chose whether or not we were gonna cook at the front fire or the back fire.
I did.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that was like a big thing. We were like, we're going to have lunch by the backfire where we want to eat our rice.
Yeah. Here, I have a clip of that too. Here.
We can have a girls' lunch down here.
Yes.
That's right.
Girls' lunch down here.
The backfire.
Like, why would you not be like, Dom, we thought maybe it'd be a good idea to eat down here today? I would have been like, okay, no.
I don't know. Because we were all dumbasses. That's why.
It's crazy.
We could have just done a lot of different things. But yeah, we were like, ugh, we're going to eat lunch in the bedroom instead of in the kitchen.
There's so many different interactions you have in those days, and that you just, certain things sponge to you. You know what I mean? And certain things you absorb, and something that's completely not intended a certain way will just marinate and do things in your brain and turn somebody into somebody they're not necessarily, you know. That's the craziness of the game. It's also the beauty of the game. It's the hardest part is being able to continue to let every other player you're still in the game with really understand what you're trying to accomplish. I mean, while also being sensitive to the fact that that person is also trying to accomplish something. You just don't want to be misunderstood or misread.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it backfires all the time.
Okay. Edward Morris wants to know, did Ron pick the correct people to go on the family visit with? Callum, what do you think? He did get voted out. Did he screw up the people he should have taken with him, or did he have no business winning that challenge in the first place?
I mean, probably no business winning in the first place, but mm-hmm. once he won, I mean, of course he was going to take Julie because they're like, it's a complicated relationship, but they're obviously working together at this point. And then I thought it was a good move to use Gavin's as the story. You know, it was like an easy way to get away with it, right? Like, well, I can't not choose him because they just got married.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I forgetting?
Of who didn't get picked?
Oh, that's it. No, yeah. He just only got to pick two people. That's right. I don't think he should have picked anyone else. Dom, what's your take?
That's really hard to determine who it doesn't, no matter who you take, you're going to aggravate somebody else.
Yeah.
But I really got this sense though, that when he won the reward, that like, I got like the sense that the game was his, and it was only just a moment later where you see him in that really confident conversation with his husband, just sitting there like, I'm in control of this game. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, kiss of death, dude. Right.
Yeah.
There. You know what I mean? And so that was where I saw a real transition after he won that challenge. He was just like, I'm hitting every mark out here. I made it to loved ones. I won the loved ones. I get to choose who goes with me. I'm running this game. And you just see how like that real confident aura just took over him. And he's like, I got this game. And he lost sight of what was actually going on. And that to me was like wacky. But there was two things I noticed. One was during Gavin's confessional during the award challenge, where he's talking about his fiance. Well, right then.
They're married.
No, they got married now. Yeah. Sorry, Gavin. I apologize. that he was like, he was getting emotional, and he's just, he said, just the way he said, I have so much to play for now. Something was screaming winner to me right there.
Yeah.
Gavin.
And then, yeah, I mean, I don't, I, he can definitely, he has a story to get there. I mean, like I said, he's played, he's doing things in the game. He's just a subtle player. He's not a big move player. So him winning is not out of the realm of possibility to me.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that I picked up on a quote was when Rick found the idol clue, and like, he's walking with it and he's like, I may have just stumbled across $1 million.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, he just picked up like, ah. So like, you hear these little quotes and you like, it starts playing with your mind, and you try to play that game survivor from your couch again and try to really determine who's going to win this thing. But I did, like, I heard those couple of comments, and it got me thinking, does Gavin have a real shot here? And he does. If you really think about it, he's not on anyone's radar right now. So who the hell knows?
Yeah. I want to just add something to the Ron winning the family visit. I do think that the family visit, and we, Steven and I were talking about this last night, should Ron have won the family visit? I think if you are somebody who is seen potentially as having a lot of power in the group, I think that you should avoid winning the family visit. And I think if you're somebody who's like seen as somebody who's like on the bottom, I think it's maybe not a bad idea to win the family visit, because I think that for Ron, that he had his like eggs in a lot of different baskets where a lot of people thought that they had deals with him. And then he sort of had to show his cards there by having to pick people for the family reward. Whereas like, if Devin's won the family reward, he's desperate. He's like trying to, you know, get anything going. So he can give out those family visit. You know, I think that, and you guys tell me, like, Sebastian was not seen as somebody who was, you know, with a ton of power in your game. I think that if he's picking those people, I think that maybe it's not the same as, you know, Dominic or Wendell giving out those spots.
Yeah, I agree. Like Kellen said, she wasn't mad at Sebastian, I mean, for her own personal reason, but I didn't get the sense that anyone had an issue with Sebastian. I think, like I said, I think I remember feeling immediate relief after not winning. You can't help it. You try to win because you want that moment locked up, but simultaneously you don't want to win it because you know what's about to come, and it could really cost you your game, you know? And I don't, you know, for me, I don't think anyone had really an issue with Sebastian doing what he did. I think they just assumed he was just doing what his heart told him to.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Corey B, who says, do you think that Reem's positive greeting to Ron was a sign of the jury's real opinion of him? Since she hadn't met him, her opinion likely reflected what she was told about him from her peers. Kellen, you have any thought on that, where Reem had a pretty warm greeting for Ron Clark?
Yeah, I mean, I think Corey B has hit the nail on the head. Like, those people have to have, oh, yes, ding. You have to, I thought my phone was going off. I was like,
yes.
Oh my gosh,
you have another call.
This up again. So, no, I think that's exactly right. She had never met him, and so her entire picture of who that person is from the stories of the people who have met him. So great insight. Absolutely, she likes him because of the way people have talked about him.
Okay. Dom, you have any other thoughts on that?
Are you talking about she greeted him like warmly?
Yeah, she was like
tribal, or
no, on the edge of extinction, where everybody, I heard good things about you. And he's like, I lied a lot. I told a lot of lies. And she's like, oh, it's a game, dude.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. Yeah,
whatever.
I just forgot about that. Yeah, we all lie. Yeah, right. He's
how come Ron Clark can lie, but then I tell one lie, and then you're like, dude, Wardog, you're on my last nerve. Back in the water.
I think, you know what? Hearing it is great from you, but I need to see the puppets.
I have to get them back out.
We got to do a whole skit. We got to do it. Oh, my God. Yeah. Why? Yeah, exactly. Why is Ron pardoned from his sins, but everyone else is evil? I don't get it.
Maybe she was a big fan of the Ron Clark movie.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Listen, dude, Chandler from Friends could do no wrong in my mind. That's who played Ron Clark, Matthew Perry.
Wait, what?
There was the Ron Clark movie. And
that's a real thing.
Yes. Kellen, do you know about this?
I know that there was a movie. Yes. I did not know who played him.
Yes. Matthew Perry from Friends, not Tyler Perry, that Matthew Perry played Ron Clark in the movie.
Wait, listen, we got to back up and forgive me, Ron Clark. I do not know your entire story. Why is there a movie about Ron Clark?
He's a famous teacher that started an academy.
I know of the Ron Clark Academy. I'll be honest.
Yes.
I'm not sure what goes on at the academy.
Yes.
All right. I got to do a little Ron Clark homework. Ron, I apologize, my man.
Now, I haven't seen the movie. Does somebody play Lloyd in the Ron Clark story?
Oh, is it his whole personal journey?
I don't know. I haven't seen it. I have to ask Megan Z. She's our authority on the Ron Clark story.
Let's get some info on that.
Yeah. It's a great movie. You would love it, Dom. So good. Okay. Dan Sinensky says, Ghost Island featured the Threats, the two of you included, banding together to one degree or another in the larger tribe dominating post-merge. In The Edge of Extinction, it's played out in the opposite way, similar to David versus Goliath. This is just because they've seen Ghost Island. What allows Threats and dominant tribes to stick together, and is that the right move? Where the Threats, you know, we saw that they tried to come together during the vote after Kelly Wentworth went home. But it does seem like in this season, Threats are targeting Threats more than Threats are working together.
Kellen?
Sorry, I definitely thought this was going to be a Dom question.
I got it. Yeah, the Threats... This is great. The Threats are definitely targeting the Threats. I agree. Like for myself and Wendell, we knew we were Threats, so we stayed together. We worked together, and we did what we can to what we felt was the next biggest problem for us, or our next biggest challenge. So, like, we had intentions to do one thing, and then Dez caused a commotion with her antics trying to get Kellen out and all that craziness. So now she became an immediate threat to us, and we were able to put that together and do that. But I think every season is just going to have its own flavor. I don't think there's necessarily going to be a strong trend leaning one way or another. It's just the game is always based on circumstance. You know, you can say what you want about how good you are at this, how great you are in puzzles. None of that matters. The circumstances of the game is what matters. And if there's a situation where you have to work with somebody that you would never spend a minute of in your real life, then you're going to work with that person because that's what is advantageous to you in that moment in the game. So there's going to be seasons where the Threats work together, and there's going to be seasons where they're killing each other. I like the seasons where they kill each other. This seems to be a lot of fun. As long as I can follow the story, I'm all for it.
Okay. I want to ask one more question from Mike Brett. What's the best way to search through someone's stuff without getting caught? We had that moment where Rick Devins came up upon Aurora, who was going through his bag. Dominic, you would never hide an advantage in your bag, right?
Of course not.
Yes. Was that a rookie move by Rick Devins to keep anything in his bag?
The rookie move is that he didn't create a secret pouch in his bag. But I gotta tell you, I guess people get the impression that their bag won't be searched, but I guess at this point, season 38, you have to expect it's going to happen, especially if you're Rick and you know that everyone is targeting you, and you have to just assume that someone, if you step away, is going to look in your bag. What I love the best was his reaction to it. I would say 99% of the people who stumble upon someone looking through their stuff in this game will play it off and even though they may have witnessed it, I don't know how many people have the gall to like just blast you and be like, wow, so you're looking through my stuff, huh?
Yeah.
And then he lays there and just screams the word awkward. I mean, that was so great.
Yeah, but he's desperate. He's like trying to get something going.
Yeah, I guess that's true too. So he was trying to make us stir things.
That's
up
my
a
survivor fantasy, to just be in a situation where, like, I know I'm going home and like just like be crazy on the show.
I tried that.
Yeah, no, you got to do it. You got to do it. That's my dream, like my dream. Like I got like the, you know, I got voted out at the final three and then voted out where I was blindsided. But I never got to like be, no, my number was up and really just get to, you know, throw haymakers at Tribal Council.
Oh, I didn't do that at Tribal Council. I still sometimes, like I've watched my tribal back before. And to watch myself sit there silently after when it's time to revote, I'm like, what the fuck was going on in my head? Like, why did I just sit there? I don't know. I mean, I remember being so exhausted after like knowing my name was up for 3 days, but I have no idea why I didn't go just batshit crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like next time, if I know it's me at Tribal, if I get to ever play again, I will. And I know it's me like that. Y'all better watch.
Kellen, I want to know, you know, and I haven't played during the Hidden Immunity Idol era. How common is it for survivors to go through other survivors' bag? Not to say that you are a person doing that, but is that like when you watch the show is like, oh, yeah, of course that happens. Everybody goes through everybody's bag. Or is that still a rarity?
I mean, I can remember Dez went through Michael's bag. We went through Johnson's bag. I mean, I was doing it.
Yeah.
I told people Bradley went through my bag, but that was false. I just made that up.
I think that what I would do is if I was like in that Devin situation, I think what I would be is like, I would like go off and be like, hey, I'm going off to go do my interview. Nobody touch my bag while I'm gone. Okay.
Right. Yeah. That's a way to do it. And then they'd be like, why did he say that? Did he put like a trap in
there? Nobody go in my bag.
Is there a snake in this bag right now?
Kellen, watch my bag. Don't let anybody touch my bag while I'm gone.
I trust you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, oh, he must have the idol.
I never kept my extra vote in my bag.
Where'd you keep it? Can you tell us?
Yeah, I kept it in the lining, like in my bathing suit lining and ladies' underwear. There's like a space in between and there's like a lining.
Yeah.
Right in there. And then guess where Sebastian kept it after he got out of Ghost Island? He slept with it in his buff around his face.
Okay. Buff. I want to be clear. Yes.
I remember when I found my idol on the second night, and I remember how paranoid I was. I must have buried it in 12 different places.
Like a dog
days.
With a bone. Yeah.
Oh my God. I didn't know what to do with it. I'll put it here, put it there. And then finally I made that little slit on the inside of my bag and just stuffed it in there. And I was like, nobody's ever going to find this. I don't care. They could look, they're not going to find it. Mm-hmm. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't, but yeah, it's a tricky thing, keeping things in your bag. But this is the new age of Survivor. Just anticipate someone's going to look at your stuff, especially if you're on the block.
Absolutely. People are going to look through your stuff.
Kellen, do you have any fun new gambling stories like the last time you were on where you were betting for that person's coat at your job?
Oh, my gosh. So a new neighbor moved in next door, and he has a bit of a gambling problem like I do. So... We've been making tons and tons of bets just about anything you could ever think of. It's been really fun. But we have been playing this card game. I forget what it's called. It's called Golf. Have you ever played it?
No.
It's this card game Golf. And like, I keep, you know, I'll get to drinking and playing cards, and I will just keep going like, oh, double or nothing, double or nothing, double or nothing. So my new neighbor, I'm pretty sure I've paid his first full month's rent. Because I just keep betting.
Okay.
Real silly.
Well, let's play a game real quick. I think this could be fun. All right. If everybody here is in for $20 on this one, okay.
I'm in.
All right.
I'm in.
Okay. All right. So here's my. It's a draft. Okay. And we're gonna draft people in the final three. Okay. And if you get the winner, that's 2 points. Okay. So if it doesn't end up like a 1-1-1, what do you think of these rules, Dom?
If you get the winner, it's 2 points.
Yeah. So it's not just find the winner, but let's draft the final three.
Right.
Okay.
So it's a draft. So once you've.
So you we'll do a snake draft. We can do.
How you gonna draft the final three if there's six people and there's three of us?
Well, and there's somebody coming back from extinction too. It could be somebody that's on Extinction Island.
But once you have Rob,
so you have to pick people that are on that have extinction.
I mean, we could go down the line. We don't have to draft every single person in extinction, but
no. But I was saying, if there's three of us voting, drafting three people each, that's nine people.
Yeah, that's fine. You pick three. People.
I was confused. Three rounds. There's only going to be six people.
Three rounds.
We're including players from
on the edge.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I'll go last. Okay. Is that fair? I'll do 3-4 in the snake draft. Is that,
yeah, that's fine. So, all right. Yeah. Okay. I don't like how he has this all set up already.
No, I just came up with this on the fly. That's why the rules aren't that great. it's like the Rotten Coconuts League.
Yeah. It's pretty
bad. No.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Kellen, would you like to start?
I would like to go second, please.
Okay, all right. So Dominic gets the first pick and the sixth pick in the draft. Okay, I'm trying to get the most people in the final three. If you get the winner, that's 2 points.
All right, I'm gonna go big.
Okay,
I'm gonna go big or go home. I'm gonna go big and go Rick.
Okay.
All right, I'm gonna go big.
All right,
we're going Rick.
All right. I think that's the easy pick.
Well, if I don't get to pick again for
you won't be there.
I gotta go big.
Okay, but now here's where it gets tough.
Yeah,
Callan.
For me?
Yes.
Oh,
give me a person that's in the final three.
I am going to say that Lauren is gonna make it to the final.
Interesting.
Three.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Now I get two in a row here. I'm gonna go with Julie.
Uh huh.
And I'm gonna go with Aurora.
Yeah, I like both of those.
Okay. All right. Now we come back to Kellen.
Oh, so I've got to choose between Victoria or Gavin,
or an Edge of Extinction person.
I'm gonna pick Gavin.
Okay. All right, Kellen has Gavin.
I'm going Victoria.
Okay, Victoria for.
Oh, and I go again.
Yeah, you go again on snake draft. Okay, so you get the first Edge of Extinction person.
Wow, how do I do that?
Pick a name.
Yeah, it's no, gambling. I know, but what do I base any of that on? Right, it's just a pure. All right. I think it's safe to say that none of the returnees are coming back in.
Ooh.
I think so. I think that we're not going to see any of them. I'm going to go with. I'm going War Dog.
War Dog to win a challenge.
I have faith in him.
Finally. Okay. All right. Kellen, who you got?
I am going to go safe with Joey Amazing.
Okay, Joey Amazing. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a good pick.
Okay. You got to pick Reem.
I got to pick Reem. What, call my shot? Okay, I was going to say Aubrey, but I'll take Reem just for the just to say I called it. Okay. Wow, okay. All right. Well, this was a lot of fun to get to catch up with you both. Do you have anything else that you guys want to ask each other? Ask me.
I am
sounds
full.
Like a no.
I am, my well is full.
Okay. All right.
Dominic, I don't think so. I'm still hoping to come out for an Abate weekend this summer.
Whoa.
Yes. The backyard is under construction. It will be ready soon.
Okay.
Woo-hoo. We may be putting in a basketball court. Don't tell anybody.
Okay.
Ooh, that's exciting. And like the Sesterninos and Abates, you're like amigos now, right? Can I just be like the one weird single lady who comes along?
That's fine. We don't live near each other. I still live in Los Angeles.
Yeah. I know this. Yeah. You know,
yes,
friends.
Okay, well, maybe it'll be one of the weekends that we're back on the East Coast. that you're there.
All right, good. I just wanted to make sure. I didn't want to have FOMO, even though there would be a lot of children involved. But there, you all have cute kids.
Okay.
Much appreciated.
Kellen does not like ugly children. This is well documented.
I forgot all about that.
Yes.
I just stepped right into that.
Yes.
She's not invited. No.
Okay. Well, I know that Dominic needs to get back to searching WebMD to see any potential problems that he has.
Oh, Kel doesn't know. Kel, while I was waiting for you to get yourself set up with your issues, I had nothing else
tech
to do
issues. Other
than Google and WebMD, my physical ailments from doing all this yard work. Everything hurts, so that's
what I'm talking about. Oh, no. Oh, you're the one doing the backyard
work. I'm
surprised.
Oh, thanks. Okay.
I mean, I just...
Why does Dominic? Do you think that he just is gonna sit back while other people are doing the work around here?
Yeah, I thought he was gonna sit back, have a brewski, and watch while the people who he hired with all of those winnings that he has.
That money's gone.
Okay, he's counting on Rick Devins winning the game, right. $40. All right. Well, this was very fun. Of course, you can follow Kellen on Twitter with a great Twitter handle. It is KS Becto.
At KS Becto on Twitter and Insta. Hit me up.
Yes. And then we have Dominic _Abate.
Yep.
There you go.
Simple.
There you go. Easy. Wait, you couldn't get regular Dominic Abate without the underscore?
I think I wanted it to separate the first and last name, or is that silly? Oh, you don't have that?
I don't like underscores.
Oh, you don't like them?
I'm anti-underscore.
I didn't know that was a thing. I'm sorry.
I don't like it. I feel the way about underscores the way Kellen feels about unattractive children.
You only have to type my name once and then, or just not even type it. You just click follow for the most part, right? It's not like you have to type the name.
Yeah.
Unless you're searching for me.
I'm searching for you.
It's okay. Just, you just don't like the way it looks.
Yeah, I don't like the way I got to find the underscore. It's too much. Okay. All right. Well, dude, you know what? I don't even like underscores. I don't even like overscores. Okay. All right. Well, this was so much fun. Thank you for making this, two-on-one podcast a thing.
Anytime. I hope we could do it again. And I think we should mix and match people like this.
This is your thing, because I've podcasted the last three times I podcast with you. I podcast with you and your wife, you and Chrissy Hoffbeck, and you and Kellen.
Oh, right. That's right.
Dom, always willing to share the spotlight.
Yes. The man has no ego.
You love threesome.
I love me
generous podcaster. Okay. All right. Kellen, what's next for you?
Oh, my goodness. I've just been working a lot, which is sad. I'm really excited for it to be summer in Denver. Nothing big. I just went back to Fiji in February. That was
How was that?
So it was amazing and crazy and like PTSD, but also beautiful and wonderful. So it was an amazing trip. Just working and ready for some hiking this summer in Denver. Nothing too crazy. How about you, Dom? Do you have big plans?
I have huge plans. As a matter of fact, it came up in a conversation I recently had with Michael Yerger, which I will share with you briefly as bonus footage. This will be bonus footage for all you listeners out there. Hold on. Here he is. Okay. So I recently reached out to Yerger because I haven't spoken to him in a while. And I said, hey, Yergs, what's up? Just checking in. How you holding up? How's everything going? What's up, bro? I was thinking about you, doing well. Just gearing up for Coachella.
Oh,
that type of thing. So I said, my response, and this is the answer to your question, what do I have coming up? I said, well, while you're gearing up for Coachella, bro, I'm gearing up for my daughter's 9th birthday party in the backyard. A-list celebrities are already calling it the party of the century. It's going to be epic, bro. They're going to have a clown and a snow cone machine, and we're going to have it catered from Monty's Italian Restaurant. Are you sure you want to go to Coachella? There'll be plenty of MILFs, bro. I'm just saying.
Oh, no.
Took a turn.
Anyway,
sorry. A snow cone machine.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I actually have Mr. Softy rented out for 2 hours. He's going to just pull up on my driveway.
Oh, that's good. That's a good get.
Anything you could do. So,
yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to share that bonus footage there. But yeah, my daughter's birthday. That's about it. And a lot of yard work. So,
okay. Well, thank you both so much. That this was a pleasure. And let's see who wins this draft.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. Next time you can for sure see me and Dom together, probably. Rob, I don't know if you know this, but both of us are trying to work towards making it to Run It Up Reno this fall.
Oh, okay. Right. All right. This, we'll watch out for that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, we will see how that plays out. We'll see how the draft plays out. And thank you both so much.
All right,
have
Rob.
A good one.
Okay. See you later, Kellen.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. All right, everybody, there you have it. Dominic and Kellen here on the podcast, 2-on-1. Lots of fun to go through everything with the two of them from Ghost Island here as we are less than 2 weeks away from the Survivor finale. We've got Bryce Isaiah coming up next on our feedback show. So be on the lookout for that. Get your feedback questions in. We're recording that Friday afternoon, so be quick about it. Don't wait. What you looking for? What you waiting for to get those feedback questions in. Of course, thank you so much to the patrons of Rob Has a Podcast who make all of this podcasting possible. Of course, to find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron, our secret patron-only podcast feed, becoming part of our patron community, head on over to robhasawebsite.com/patron. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.